This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Hello and welcome to another Cup of Earl Grey. I'm your host for today's episode, Lee Hutchison, and joining me, as always, is Amy Nelson. How are you, Amy?
I'm doing great. Just trying to stay cool when the hot summers of Vegas are here.
You're always cool, Amy. And someone a bit less cool, the gamer of the trio, Richard. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I've just been on a stag weekend, so I'm just sort of coming back to life now. But so I'm excited to do this topic, and of course we've got Justin Ozer as well, associate producer and content manager for Trek FM. How are you, Justin?
Hi, great to be here. Well, I'm preparing all the details I need to attend Star Trek Las Vegas in a little bit, so excited, maybe a little nervous about that because I've never been to a Star Trek convention before, so I think I'm in for a lot.
you'll have Amy to hold your hand. I'm sure she'll be an amazing tour guide to an amazing city and an amazing convention.
Yeah, definitely.
And while we're at it as well, you know, associate producer of Earl Grey, content manager for Trek FM, you're now going to be one of the new co-hosts of Earl Grey. Unfortunately, I will be having to step back. I'll be here and there, maybe guest appearances, but unfortunately, life has just got too manic for me. I'm going to be moving home and so much on the horizon for personal projects and work, and just sadly wasn't going to be a commitment that I could make for the foreseeable future. So thankfully, Justin is going to be stepping in from this episode onwards, so hopefully you'll enjoy my little hot seat.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be a co-host on Earl Grey. I mean, I'm sorry I won't be able to hear you each week on Earl Grey, but hopefully we'll, you know, get you back to guest every now and again, and hopefully everything goes well with all the stuff you're busy with in your life.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna miss it, but yeah, like, you know, it's just been such a manic, even kind of the past few months, and just now kind of having bought a place and kind of having to be decorating it and gonna be without internet for a few while, and it just seemed like a kind of a time to just take a little step back and focus on some sort of DIY and personal projects. And then, you know, like, you've been amazing on all the episodes you filled in for all three of us really when we've been on holiday, so I can't think of a better person to fill the void. So feels like you're already a member of the crew, so I'm sure you'll ease in and enjoy the bigger quarters.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored, and I just hope that I can be up to the standard that you've already set on Earl Grey.
Yeah, you're too kind. So, because it's my last episode, as it were, I've chosen the topic for this week, and I've gone for something a little bit different, which is not unsurprising to our usual listeners. I'm going to go back to 1987, not just the year I was born, but obviously the year Next Generation came into being. And Star Trek The Next Generation was the first Star Trek TV series in a long time. And Gene Roddenberry wanted to get people's brains firing, thinking about sci-fi and different ideas that they could potentially do. And he decided to show them a bunch of movies on the Paramount lot to kind of get them thinking about what sci-fi was like in the 80s and see if he could kind of generate some ideas. Blade Runner was one of the movies, but one of the movies that caught my eyes when I was reading about this was Aliens. And I was wondering, why aliens? And what could they have got out of watching Aliens? So I want to explore one of the biggest connections, I think, between The Next Generation and Aliens. And that's Tasha Yar and Vasquez. And we're going to kind of talk about maybe some extra things that they might have been inspired from watching Aliens, perhaps androids. And we're going to just kind of dive in and see what we were inspired by or what the crew might have been inspired by watching this movie. So, as I said, Vasquez is clearly the biggest influence to come out of this screening. Now, did you guys see much of Tasha Yar and Vasquez? I mean, Vasquez, for anyone that's not seen Aliens, is a space marine and she's a tough talking. She's not taking any nonsense from anyone. You know, hard as bones character. And there's definitely parallels to be seen with Tasha Yar. Was that parallels that you saw, Justin?
Well, I just want to say first, I actually hadn't seen Aliens until yesterday. So
my God, I'm so jealous and of you and baffled at the same time.
Wait. But before we go to the comparison, what'd you think of it?
Well, I have to, here's what I'll say about it. So I think
have you seen Aliens? Have you seen Alien firstly?
Yes, I did see it as a kid, but I saw it many, many years ago and it scared the hell out of me. But I'm sure it did many people.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. So here's what I have to say about Aliens having watched it yesterday. So I think it's really very good at what it's going for, but what it's going for isn't the kind of thing that I tend to seek out, which is kind of like a sci-fi horror movie. So I actually enjoyed the first hour quite a bit, getting to know the characters, kind of reorienting myself in this Aliens universe. But when it got to the point where it was like, all right, we got to track down all of these creatures and kill them all, that just doesn't tend to be my thing. But I can tell it's really good at what it's doing, you know, but it's not my kind of thing that I usually seek out. But I did find it very interesting to look at it from the perspective of Vasquez inspiring Tasha Yar, because I'd read about that, but I had never seen it, didn't know the characters. So I'm looking forward to the conversation that we'll have on that. But I have to say, like, the last hour and a half wasn't really my thing, unfortunately. Sorry, Lee.
That's okay. You're welcome to your opinion. Just, I would be a bit weird about telling that to James Cameron. He might hunt you down.
Sure, I do like some James Cameron things. I love Avatar, but you know, it's going for a different kind of thing. You know, that's more.
I love Avatar.
Yeah, but for me, that's going for a more Star Trek kind of thing in Avatar in a lot of ways. So, but anyway, that's kind of how I saw it.
Excellent. So, and what about yourself, Richard? Are you a fan, or have you seen Aliens before?
I can recite that entire movie almost word by word. I love Aliens. It's been a movie, I can't remember the first time I watched it, to be quite honest. It was a very, very long time ago. I know it scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. It's just been a movie that it's in my top 10. It's actually in my top 5, actually. Of my all-time favorite movies, along with Avatar is one of them, because I absolutely love Avatar. It's just a great film, regardless of what my fiance says. I know you weren't looking for the parts. The parts of the movie that you weren't looking for, Justin, are the parts I love.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like Starship Troopers. I love a good alien bug hunt sort of shooting kind of movie. And it's just, I mean, watching over it. Actually, Jennifer and I watched it 2 days ago. And it was the first time she ever watched it, too. Yeah, she didn't like it. I mean, and she loves action movies and military movies just like I do. But when you combine the two, yeah, that's where she draws a line, apparently. So, yeah. But I absolutely love this movie. This movie is a great example of great cinema. It's one of the best. I think it is.
And what about yourself, Amy? Richard's waxing lyrical about Aliens there. If you were seeing this movie in 1987 with Gene Roddenberry, would you have thought it was a good movie?
Yes, definitely. I enjoyed Aliens, and I do remember seeing it. And yeah, it scared me. I was just so young. And again, not that familiar with that kind of sci-fi, but I did a podcast on the 602 and I signed up with Matthew and it was Alien. And I was like, oh yeah, I love Aliens. This is the one where she saves the little girl and did it. And then come to find out it was Alien. And I was like, wait, this isn't what I signed up for. I didn't even know there was an Alien because I saw Aliens and loved it and was so excited. And so I did the podcast and it was fine. And it was good because I had my brother watching it with me and he owns them all. And so he was like, OK, so this is Alien. We watched it in prep for the 602 Club. And I was like, but this isn't the one that I know. And so then we immediately watched Aliens and I was like, oh, yes, this is all familiar. I really enjoyed Ripley and the whole storyline with the little girl and, you know, the Marines or whatever, those coming in to, you know, it. I thought it was a very good story. So I'm glad that we're covering it today.
Yeah, like I also love Aliens. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Alien. You can obviously see that from my Twitter and Instagram handle. Love the Nostromo. Like I love Aliens. I've watched it so many times and I've been lucky to see it on like the big screen on at least 5 times. I'm just mad for it. I was really lucky last year to see it at the Royal Albert Hall here in the UK and perform with a live orchestra. It was the first time that performance had ever been done. And at the end, completely unannounced, James Cameron, Gail Ann Hurd, the producer, and Sigourney Weaver came out. And my little mind was just like freaking out. I could not believe it. So yeah, I love Aliens. And yeah, if I was watching this with Gene Roddenberry, I would be buzzing about being able to create a new sci-fi series. There's just so much to be inspired by here and so much technology, some ideas and stuff. But obviously the big takeaway for me is the parallels between Tashi Yar and Vasquez. For yourself, Justin, you obviously knew this was the topic we were going in for, so you're probably watching this movie with an eye on Vasquez and Tashi Yar. Did you see that parallel going in, or did you think, I've been invited onto a topic here and I think this makes no sense at all?
I think it does. I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense, but like, I think one of the things I was getting at is that, you know, this universe that's in, you know, the Alien movies is quite a different universe than the Star Trek universe, especially in the Next Generation. So I think that you can't quite have that same kind of character. Although interestingly, when I was watching it, I was like, man, she's kind of like cool, calm, combat ready, you know, ready to fire and kill whoever. This actually seems more like Worf than Tasha, you know? Mm. But I did see some of that inspiration though, because, you know, Tasha was, you know, the head security and tactical officer, which was something a little bit different for a female Star Trek character at the time. And she was pretty strong and pretty calm and confident at security when she got the chance to do it within, you know, the 23 episodes she was in. I mean, she's somebody they would see an all-powerful being like Q and want to confront him and do something about it. And I was just making notes on some of the things. And also, even though it's, I think, a rightly much maligned episode in Code of Honor, you get to see her martial arts expertise and that she can really, you know, kick butt. So I could definitely see some of the parallels, but it was funny that I was seeing that attitude and I was like, man, this is like Worf or like a Klingon that's just like ready for battle, you know?
Yeah, Lee, you just described when you asked Justin, what are we talking about? So I also watched the movie again and I was like, what does Lee even see? Okay, so here are my notes. What do they have in common? Well, they both have short hair. That was about as much as I could muster, because watching Vasquez, like, she's almost insubordinate. Like, if she's given an order, there's always under her breath some kind of maligned remark and, you know, sort of questioning and why am I going to do this? And the interplay that she has is sort of negative. I guess loving, without being in combat myself, I don't know that interpersonal relationship that officers or, you know, soldiers have with each other. But man, she was dishing it out and, you know, just sort of harsh to everyone. And I don't know if that was part of her defense because, you know, she has so much to prove being a woman and in a combat area. But I'm interested to see, because it just, she was under her breath, always questioning, always making rude comments. And with Tasha, we don't see that. I don't know if that's because it's on TV versus a movie, or that she had more respect for, you know, chain of command and what have you. So those were my initial thoughts.
Well, one thing we haven't given some of the background on this. So when they were first creating the character of Yar, it was actually a character named Macha Hernandez. And if you take a look at the description that they have, I think, and I can pull it up here in a minute, I think they have more of a parallel to Vasquez, like this really like tough, no-nonsense Latina woman. And when they had to, when they were kind of going through it and they cast Denise Crosby, they changed the background of the character, changed the name to Tasha Yar, and made it, I think, a little bit different character. They actually changed the description that they had in the show Bible for it. So I think what they were thinking early on may have been a little bit closer from what I've read.
Well, and we do know the original, you know, it was going to be Marina Sirtis that was going to play, you know, maybe that would have gone in line.
She was one of the people that was considered, but I think even before that, they were seeing the character a little bit differently.
Yeah, because on that kind of the audition call sheet for Hernandez, they noticed a Jeanette Goldstein type, and that's obviously the actress that played Vasquez. So pretty much they're going, we want someone that's just like Vasquez to play Tasha Yar. And that was in those kind of original call sheets. And obviously Goldstein herself ended up appearing in Star Trek Generations as one of the officers on the Enterprise B. So she got there eventually. So they were definitely keen to find someone that was pretty much in that vein. And obviously just in the casting process, they ultimately compromised and went with Denise Crosby. Well, originally Marina Sirtis was kind of to play Yar.
Right.
So yeah, there's definitely kind of an interesting story to be told with the casting of Tasha Yar.
Yeah, is it okay if I kind of read out what I have from Memory Alpha on? Yeah. Yeah, so originally they had the character as Lieutenant Macha Hernandez, 26-year-old woman of unspecified Latin descent who serves as the starship security chief. She is described as having a new quality of conditioned body beauty, and that's all with dashes together, a fire in her eyes, and muscularly well-developed and very female body. But keeping in mind that much of her strength comes from attitude, Macha has an almost obsessive devotion to protecting the ship and its crew, and treats Captain Picard and Number One as if they were saints. I don't know about that last part about as if they were saints, but for the most part, like down to that point, that is a very much a Vasquez-like character. But then later on, when they revised the character to Tasha Yar, they described her as the Starship Security Chief Tasha, who performs that same function both aboard ship and on away missions. Born at a failed Earth colony of renegades and other violent undesirables, she escaped to Earth in her teens and discovered Starfleet, which she still worships today as the complete opposite of all the ugliness she once knew. So they gave this backstory of Yar being on this failed, terrible colony. Of course, later they brought in, you know, the rape gangs and all of that. So I think it becomes quite a different character from what they were originally considering in late 1986, which I think was much closer to Vasquez and Aliens.
Absolutely. And what about yourself, Richard? Obviously, we all know about your military eye. When you were watching this movie, which, as you say, you love, did you see much of Tasha Yar and Vasquez, or did you see a kind of origin of that character?
I saw a lot. And, okay, so I understand that, she's insubordinate, and given that Lieutenant Gorman was like inexperienced, and that's part of the reason. And you don't really necessarily have to be in combat to understand the dynamics of the military, because a lot of them are pretty much the same. Like, you know, teaching is you know, hierarchies and all that kind of stuff. But like, I mean, the way I saw it is that, I hate to say it myself, I probably wouldn't follow someone that's only been on like 2 combat drops, and that was the second one. But like, I mean, especially when everything goes down and, you know, you're in a firefight, you're going to listen to the person who has the most experience and also the one who you trust the most. So I really think that she's very loyal to those who are around her. I think it was a perfect example for Tasha Yar, because in a security environment, you have to trust the people that are around you. I mean, you guys are, in a sense, going into life-threatening positions, whereas, you know, science may not always be like that, or even engineering sometimes might not always be like that. Obviously, you'll have that trust. But with security, one person messes up, the chances are most of you will probably die. But like, yeah, I was actually reading that the first who was going to be Tasha Yar. I would have loved to seen a fiery Latina there. That would have been awesome. Because, I mean, yeah, I guess I couldn't even imagine what it would be like, because it would be awesome all the time, and maybe TNG would be my all time favorite forever.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about this and that kind of, you know, fiery character, I actually thought of Kira on mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she might be the closest thing that we've gotten to a Vasquez like character, that nobody wants to mess with Kira. You know,
she's for sure insubordinate.
And she could for sure be insubordinate and you know, kind of go her own way, and had all of these fighting skills and things like that. So that's one of the things that I thought about. But for one of the things I was impressed in looking at the Vasquez character in Aliens is that she's calm, she's confident, she's going to do her job. Even when some of these other guys are like breaking down, they're like, oh man, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, come on, we got to just do this. And she does it like up until the very end. And Yar is kind of a similar kind of character in that way. She's not really going to break. She's going to do her job. She's even going to challenge Picard when she has to, for the safety and security of the ship. So I can definitely see some of that in Yar.
And what about for yourself, Amy, that Vasquez and is, you know, one of the strongest female characters in kind of movie history. Do you feel that they, obviously if they're trying to achieve that kind of goal with the Next Generation, do you feel Tasha Yar kind of comes up to that kind of high standard as a kind of female empowerment figure, or does she fall kind of a bit flat?
No, I think she does show, you know, that power, and because I think that she does a good job in owning that character and owning the role as security. I mean, she's very, she go gets it. If something is going to, like when Q comes on the bridge, man, she's ready to leap and get in front of and protect her captain and protect the crew. I mean, you definitely see that she's very avid about that. And she has the power within her role. And I think she's comfortable in giving commands to others. And yeah, like in Code of Honor, she definitely can fight. So I think that she shows that inner power that she needs to be security, you know, head of security, and as a female.
Are we referencing a bad episode?
I know. I don't know what Richard loves more, Code of Honor or the fact of strong female Latino characters.
No, I just love that we're just bringing it up. That's all.
Well, it's a good example of her fierceness, right, and fighting skills. So,
yeah, she does not back down at all.
Yeah. But
yeah, she's certainly not the problem with that episode.
No.
That's right.
But I think the writers and producers of TNG struggled with it, though, because I think they were thinking they didn't want to go too far in a certain direction. So you have examples like The Naked Now, where she's, you know, thinking about being so feminine and trying on clothes and all of that, which I think very much cuts against what the character should be. But I mean, for the most part, they do show her as strong, but I think even the writers and producers then were struggling with it. Like, we don't want to go too far. But what I respect in Aliens is they're like, we're just going to go all the way with it. She's just going to kick ass. She's not going to worry about what people think about her or her appearance or anything like that. She's just going to go with it. And I appreciate that. But there are parts that you see for Yar's character where they kind of cut against that, unfortunately.
Well, and I think, like I said, that shows sort of her being a woman and having it all, basically, when I see that, you know, and yes, she is strong and is over protection of the whole Enterprise, but yet she still has that femininity. And it may be a product of the time and that it's a series, whereas a movie, you have, here it is, it comes out, it's a one time, we want the viewers. Well, on a TV series, we need to have the viewers for the long haul. And so to not alienate, i.e. the male dominated viewers, we need to have her, and maybe I'm making assumptions, but you know, we need to show her more feminine to keep the male viewers more interested, is what I was thinking.
I suppose there's always a point as well that with Tashiar, we know she grew up on a planet where there was rape gangs, which is quite a bold and striking thing to, you know, be mentioned at all in Star Trek. And then she's the first character within the first episode after the pilot to, you know, have consensual sex with a character while under the influence. It kind of jars with that sort of information that you feel that if this is a person that's been subjected to something so horrific, and like, you know, that would really kind of twist and change your views on kind of sex and sexuality, to then have her in this episode, even under the influence, to be someone that's so willing to be, you know, loved or kind of to have sex. That always strikes me as a bit odd. It strikes me as very much male fantasy with the writing.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, unfortunately you might see a lot with certain female characters. They've been, you know, damaged in some way by something violent. And I think it's actually an unfortunate part of her backstory. Sure, it could be something that could actually happen, but, you know, it's not the kind of thing I think back then they would ever put into, you know, a male character's backstory. It's something that they wanted to, like, it seems like when they changed the character from being this, like, you know, fierce Latina character to being Yar as a security chief, that they wanted to insert in some vulnerability or reason not to have quite the same edge. I don't know. It's always bothered me that's part of her backstory, and that you wouldn't see that in a male character.
Well, but do you think that she could have had a different backstory to make her be so strong? I mean, strength comes out of adversity.
I don't think
she could. She sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interject. But if you're going to talk about like a utopian universe where money really isn't poverty is basically eliminated, I mean, you kind of really have to go to something like that, or at least go to those lengths in order to show how strong she is. I mean, what most, I don't want to say most, a good portion of, like, you know, strong women that, you know, I've heard about and also met, you know, it's usually, it deals more with poverty and class struggle than anything else. I mean, not saying that people don't go through rape and all that kind of stuff and family problems and whatnot, but I'm just saying, like, you, something like that that's been eliminated from Star Trek, it kind of, you know, ties your hand behind your back writing.
I'm completely fine if her background is she's grown up amidst war and poverty and this you know, violent planet, but to insert the part about rape gangs, I think is completely, like, unnecessary to do, and something that you would, at least back then, would only do with a female character. I mean, you have, again, the contrast of Kira, where she's grown up under this Cardassian occupation. There's a lot of violence and oppression, but they didn't have to insert in there, like, hey, there were these gangs of people running around, you know, raping people. I think it's just like an unfortunate trope that can happen sometimes for a woman's background. And I don't know, it just bothers me a bit about that. It's not like a huge thing that destroys how I see Tasha, but it seems like something that's happening just so that they can damage her in a certain way. Yeah. You know,
it's a throwaway line that's not really been given much thought. It's sort of like, yeah, we'll do that, as if it's some sort of weird Mad Max style kind of planet. Like, there's a time and a place for those sorts of kind of things. And if you're going to do it, you know, truly flesh it out, and, you know, you can create an interesting story out of it, and something that many people that have perhaps been victims of assault could relate to. But this, it's just sort of a throwaway line to seem edgy in what really is a family TV series. It just seems unnecessary. And in terms of, like, and was there any other observations where you was, and just focusing on Vasquez, that you saw that would become parallels with Tasha Yar? I mean, for example, you know, both of them go out in a blaze of glory, did one have a bit of a better exit than the other, or were there things where you thought, maybe that was somewhere they could have gone with Tasha Yar?
For sure, Vasquez had a better ending than Yar did, but yeah, that's me.
There's a little more purpose and meaning to
exactly.
It,
exactly.
Right? What?
I always thought you were an a-hole, Riker.
Put her boot right into that alien's face and put a couple bullets in her in his head and then die with the lieutenant.
Well, what I mean is, like, the way that Vasquez goes out, it's part of accomplishing the mission and helping everyone to do their job and to survive and get off the planet and all of that. Whereas with Yar, it's kind of a little meaningless and senseless. But I mean, I do actually appreciate Yar's death because it does tell you how dangerous space can be and that someone could get killed off it at any time. But as far as like the meaning and the purpose of it beyond that, it's unfortunately not something that furthers the mission or accomplishes something like it does for Vasquez. At least that's how I saw it.
I don't understand.
You sounded a bit hesitant there. What were you thinking?
Yes, I don't understand. Okay, and it happens with Data in Nemesis 2, but we won't talk
spoilers,
about that.
Spoilers, Jesus.
What if someone hasn't seen it in 15 years?
Yeah. There's probably someone doing a next generation, like, first time watching it all the way through, and it's like, Data dies, oh, forget it. I'm going to watch Game of Thrones instead.
Someone just threw their TV dinner across the room.
So I don't understand when people say that Yar or Data's death was meaningless. She was there protecting the crew, and that was her goal. And that's what she signed up for, and as did Data, but we will put that aside. She was there protecting the crew the best that she knew how, and she was impulsive, and her whole heart was in it. So the fact that Armus, you know, killed her, I mean, that's not, I don't see that as meaningless. Yeah, it wasn't really part of the mission, but that was her goal and that was her purpose. And she was going to do everything, include giving her life, to protect those people.
Yeah, but Guinan and the alternate version of Yar even see it as meaningless. That's what I take it from.
And I think that's kind of good in a way. Like, I on paper, like, if you're going to kill, and we see it all with like some TV programs these days, and I think Star Trek's always had a bit of a ropey history with killing off characters. But I think when you see kind of Tasha Yar's death, like, you watch and you think, oh, that's how they've written off like a main character. And it rarely ever happens in Star Trek that they kill a main character. So when it happens, it's a big moment. And like, for them to go, it's like a sludge monster. It is meaningless. It is pretty terrible. But then I kind of like it that it was meaningless and it was just so kind of like blasé, like, yeah, she was just killed like that. It was that simple. Because sometimes that's just the way it goes, you know. Not everyone gets their perfect exit. And, you know, the death is slightly redeemed by the memorial scene at the end and then subsequently yesterday's Enterprise. So it's an interesting death. It's unique in how it tackles it, that's for sure.
I'll side with you on that one, Amy. I don't think it was meaningless either.
Right.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like it has meaning for me and the audience because it touches me a lot, and I like what that episode is going for. But like within the universe, it doesn't have quite as much meaning as it could, which is fine. I mean, because people die all the time without having some kind of like greater meaning to it, or blaze of glory, or saving someone's life or something like that. It happens all the time, and I appreciate they're kind of pointing up that those kinds of things happen, but I don't think it has quite as much meaning. And I'm just thinking about meaning in terms of like, you know, you're saving someone's life in that moment or accomplishing the mission. So
I can see what you're saying. She was saving trying to save her life. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand.
No wonder
I still
Amy's
don't
a big
understand.
Fan.
Yeah, otherwise Amy would have just turned off the TV right at season two.
She was doing her job and she was protecting the crew the best that she knew how. What more meaning is that for a security officer?
Phaser fire.
Like, what would you Phaser want fire. To have seen? I mean, I understand, you know, Vasquez and I did like that play with Vasquez because she gave Lieutenant
Gordman,
she gave him a heck of a time all throughout the movie. And it was, I found that ironic that that's who she ended up dying with. You know, and so that was pretty cool. And I wish I would have seen like Tasha, you know, in the end with someone. But Okay, so that aside, but she was doing her job. And what more meaning? I don't understand that it's meaningless.
I actually watched yesterday's Enterprise the other day, and it was on TV, and we were flicking through Netflix, actually, and my girlfriend had mentioned, oh, I wouldn't mind watching an episode of Star Trek, give it a go. And I was like, oh, I'll put on yesterday's Enterprise. And it became one of those ones, like, we're talking through it, and I was like, well, this character died in this current timeline because of a sludge monster. Now he's back, and you won't believe what happens next. So she goes back into the past. She has a child who then looks like exactly like her. Oh, my God. And it was just her face like, okay. Right.
Was that the right one to show her?
Too much.
Overloaded her. Yeah. And how cool does the bridge look? Yeah, it looks all right. Yeah. Then we watched Gilmore Girls, so.
Oh, dear. Tit for tat.
Exactly. So before we go into maybe some just other parts of kind of Aliens and the Next Generation crossing over, has anyone got any kind of last comments on the Yar and Vasquez parallels or lack of parallels?
One of the things I was thinking, like, you know, I understand the insubordination and all that kind of stuff, but, like, you know, it is a movie. You can't show much when it comes to her feminism, because, I mean, I could see it. I mean, she obviously has that play between, you know, her fellow soldiers and whatnot. And, you know, that doesn't come with, you know, meeting someone all of a sudden. I mean, obviously you have to get used to someone and whatnot. But, like, it's also a special bond between soldiers, even among, like, males or even females, I'm sure. Don't know many female soldiers, but it's just.
But are you talking about like the talking crap?
Yeah,
back and
like
forth?
I mean that comes with sincerity, and you know, and they respect her. They respect her enough to where they don't have to hold her hand. And funny enough, you know, granted, there were so many tactically wrong things about that movie that I almost lost it the last time I watched it. But for the most part, it was good. But like, you don't put your machine gun in the front. Anyway, I mean, and usually your most experienced person is your machine gunner. And that's ultimately what she was, Vasquez was. So, you know, it obviously shows that she has a lot of experience and also trust, because you need to have your best gunner on that machine gun. And that's how I took it. And that's kind of that's the environment I grew up in the military, is that that's the person you should be looking at to do what you're doing right, what you need to do or correctly. So, but like, I mean, I absolutely love the character. She's just one of the boys and they trust her. That's what I took from it. So, yeah.
So, obviously, probably Vasquez wasn't the only sort of inspiration the guys took from the movie. I mean, one kind of point of interest, I don't know if you picked up on it, Justin, did the score sound a bit familiar to you?
Well, I saw it was James Horner, so yeah. I know he's done stuff in Star Trek.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, what happened with that score is, and it's brilliantly covered on the Behind the Scenes documentary, and rest in peace, James Horner. He was brought on so last minute to the movie because it was still being edited and put together that he basically had to reuse most of his Wrath of Khan score.
Oh, okay.
So next time any of you are watching it, if you've never watched it before, or you've watched it and you've listened to it 100 times, listen out and you hear so much of that Wrath of Khan score, especially towards the end. Genesis Countdown is pretty much used as the countdown music. So, and frustratingly, he was Oscar nominated for this movie and not Wrath of Khan. Pretty much he had like 3 days to make and score this movie. So he was like, I'll dust off Wrath of Khan. It's brilliantly covered on the Behind the Scenes documentary on Alien. So apart from that, was there any other things where you thought, oh, this must have gone on to inspire the Next Generation crew? For example, Bishop and Data, or Ripley's mistrust of Bishop having parallels with Pulaski's mistrust of Data. Any sort of these thoughts kind of come to mind, Amy?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, how Ripley, and of course that comes from the first movie, Alien, but she does not trust artificials. What did he prefer to be called, Bishop?
Artificial life form. I can't.
Yeah, artificial life form. And, you know, just throughout the movie, how, you know, he proves himself and is a better artificial life form than the previous one and stuff like that. And you see Ripley, I mean, Bishop saves the day, and that solidifies it for Ripley. And I think in the other movies, you know, she continues to trust artificial life forms. And so to see that switch, from, you know, Pulaski coming on to her not liking Data, he's just a machine. And you can see her attitudes, and then it transforms throughout the second season. And then she basically comes to trust Data and takes him for what he is and his value to the crew. So I liked seeing that parallel in the shows with the series.
Did she ever say that she didn't trust Data? I thought she just saw him as a tool.
I think she says it in The Child, is it, or something similar?
Was it?
Well, yeah, she says something about, I think it's clear early on that she doesn't really believe that he is kind of a sentient life form, that he's just a machine.
Right. I thought I missed something. I wasn't entirely sure because
Doesn't say that she doesn't trust him. She's just has this attitude like everybody thinks you're like everybody else, and I really think you're different. You know,
okay.
It's just that, not that she doesn't trust her. So I did pick up on Bishop, and I thought, wow, this seems very much like a Data like android. I wonder if it may have shaped some of it, although I think I've read a lot of the inspiration for Data actually comes from a Gene Roddenberry pilot from the 70s called the Questor tapes. Yeah, it was very much a Data-like character that was kind of dependable. I mean, at least in this incarnation, apparently androids weren't dependable in the first Alien movie, but just dependable and going to get the job done. I thought it was really interesting that you have Bishop like out there and where he's doing the stuff on the computer and like nothing's touching him. He's just going to do his thing because they absolutely have to have him, you know, survive past a certain point and get there. But yeah, it seemed like very much a Data-like character and I kind of appreciated that a lot. Although, what is with these artificial life forms in this universe? Do they have like milk for blood? I thought that was just really, that's an odd thing.
Lubricant of some sort.
Is that just me?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's not get into blood, or we'll be talking about the pink blood that they have in the Klingon Empire for 90 minutes one day.
No, it's Pepto-Bismol.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
So, but yeah, I appreciated that and very much reminded me of Data, the Bishop character.
Excellent. And what about yourself, Richard? Did you see anything that could be kind of brought in from that into the next generation?
Oh, yeah, totally. A lot of his character is, he's very like standoffish, obviously when someone doesn't want him to be approached. And, you know, when it comes to, like mission, when it comes to the mission, obviously he's, I'm just going to do what I'm being told and get what I need to be done. And I can see a lot of Data in it for sure that in the first season, because obviously we don't see much humor from him. And I totally see it. And I wouldn't doubt it if he has milk for blood, too.
Yeah, it was really cool when Bishop and they egged him on and they had the hand and he does the knife around, you know, and that was like, oh, I remember when Data had to put the isolinear chips in the naked now, you know, and how fast he was going.
Or, oh, that would have been so much cooler with the knife.
Right? Yeah. Just the super speed, yeah. You know, that was fun.
I wonder if they keep like a bunch of like cookies around for when these androids explode in the Alien and Aliens universe, where they can just go, "Oh, Bishop's dead. Oh, go on, let's get some cookies and just like scoop up his blood godly. With a milk glass."
You know what?
No, like, you did not do that.
No.
And that's a goodbye from me.
Yeah. No, you know what?
We know this is your last.
You know what the crazy thing is? What happens to Bishop toward the end of Aliens is the thing that disturbed me the most out of anything that happens in that entire movie. It gave me like nightmares, like nothing else in the movie I could take like seriously in that way or that would scare me. But that part, I was like, God, I just think about it and it disturbs me more than anything. Maybe it's because I love Data so much.
You should watch the Blu-ray extras. You get to see them trying that about 50 times to try and get it to land correctly. So you see James Cameron and the producers just like chucking this Bishop like torso just all around the ship. Again, and then throwing the milk on it, and it's brilliant. Definitely check that out.
Could you imagine if it was done today?
You call it brilliant. It's nightmare inducing for me.
That's the best part of the movie.
Hopefully the milk and cookies idea makes it seem a more telling idea.
No, okay, I'm not gonna be able to eat cookies anymore. Thanks.
I know.
I didn't even put that together, and now you just ruined it for me.
So does anyone have any final thoughts before we wrap up on this topic of Tasha Yar Vasquez and aliens in the next generation?
Along with milk and cookies.
Well, it's nearly bedtime for me. I'll be getting the milk and cookies.
No.
I'll just give a few of my final thoughts. So it was really interesting for me to do this comparison, even though Aliens is not my favorite movie. I did like seeing the Vasquez character and as the inspiration for Yar, because it's something I'd read about for a while and finally got to do the comparison. I do see some strong comparisons in how she's always about the security and the protection of the ship, is willing to, you know, even confront an omnipotent being like Q. Not as much the insubordination probably, but she is a really strong character. I think it is a shame that we couldn't see more of Tasha and that she couldn't kind of move forward in the series. But I think it also is interesting to think about the alternate universe where we got Macha Hernandez as a character with the description that I read before and what that would have been like. I think it would have been very, very interesting, although I do see that kind of character more like a Kira character from DS9. But anyway, I really, you know, appreciated looking into this and doing the comparison. So thanks for the topic, Lee.
That's not a problem. Well, there it was, thanks to the from what's called the 50-year journey. It's mentioned in there. It's a really fascinating book into the insight of those early days of The Next Generation. And I think I've had this idea for months and months to, like, oh, I've got to do this episode. So for my last episode as a full-time regular, I couldn't think of a better topic and a bunch of folk to talk about it with. So, yeah, and I'm glad that you got to finally watch Aliens. So, you could not have been an Earl Grey regular if you'd never watched Aliens. I would have had to step in and
pass the test.
I second that.
We'll see.
Have you seen any of the other Alien movies, or just Alien and Aliens?
Just Alien and Aliens. I mean, again, like, it's not my kind of genre, kind of like a sci-fi horror kind of genre, so it's not the kind of thing I seek out.
Well, you're going to love the next topic, where Richard tries to find the connections between Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Prometheus, Alien Covenant, Alien versus Predator, Alien versus Predator, Requiem, and The Next Generation. So look out for that, Justin.
Sweet, I'm excited.
I hope there aren't any connections.
We'll find one. We'll find one.
Oh, we'll find a tenuous one. So it's been fun talking about Tasha Yar today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Warp 5.
I just thought, you know, those were, of course, some of the other Enterprise references come up. He was a Mako. He fought in the Zindian Romulan Wars. I really like that background and that tie-in. And it makes sense that, you know, over the course of 100 years, that somebody's going to kind of go a little crazy and, you know, get to this point where they're just, you know, seething for some kind of revenge or something. So
the Ready Room.
Of all the things people to wonder about and question and be concerned about canon and visual canon on Discovery, the Klingons haven't concerned me that much, because I think the Klingons are ripe and long overdue for, you know, for lack of a better term, some species diversity. And one of the things that Star Trek is prey to, and people acknowledge it, but still, we wish it wasn't a limiting factor, was TV budgets.
The 602 Club.
That emotional core, and I tie that too with the mentors that Peter doesn't have throughout the film. There's nobody there to pick up that Uncle Ben slack.
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome to The Edge, Trek FM's brand new podcast, where we dive into the final frontier of the newest Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, the first Star Trek series to be on air in 12 and a half years, something like that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcast on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and also in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us. You will also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and on Facebook, facebook.com/Trek FM. So Amy, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on The Edge, which is Trek FM's podcast on Star Trek Discovery. Yay! So I'm there as one of the co-hosts with Aaron, Brandon, and Mike. And you can find me at Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. But my favorite place is the Babel Conference, so you can find me there. Richard, what about you?
Everyone can also find me on Facebook. I also pop in here and there in the Babel Conference. And I'm also on Twitter, and my handle is xransom. How about yourself, Justin? Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And currently, I'm tweeting out my rewatch of TNG Season 3.
See,
and
you're on brand. You're on brand.
And I have been for a couple of months. Hooray.
Yes, it's been so fun to see your tweets.
Thank you. I've loved going through TNG again. It's my fifth time through. You can also find me in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And Lee, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me not on Earl Grey for the next wee while, but I'm sure I'll be a guest here and there. I will be on The Edge with Amy next weekend, and I'll be on an episode of 602 Clubs coming up soon. And I'll just be here and there for the next wee while. But you can find me on my other podcast, Filibuster, talking about nerd and geek culture. And you can probably find me covered in paint and splinters as I decorate and build up my own home. So that will be my next few months. So I will be around.
Yes. And Lee, I just want to say it's been so wonderful to get to know you and podcast with you. Funny thing, on From There to Here, you and Richard were the only people that I appeared on that podcast with. And then when I was asked to join Earl Grey with you two, I was like, oh, perfect. I've already podcast with them. I know them. I feel like it's comfortable. And I just wanted to thank you so much for making my first podcast very enjoyable. And I'm just going to miss you tons.
Well, I'll never be too far away and stuff. That we'll always have the group chat.
Yes.
great tea.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. To get all the details, you get early access to our episodes, which it was early released last week. I was so happy. You get exclusive content, producer credits like Justin, and more available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope that you will join the team. Again, you can find details at patreon.com/trekfm. We would like to take this time to appreciate our associate producers, Michael Huter and Justin Ozer. Thank you so much for supporting Earl Grey.
Cheers, Justin.
Oh, glad to support Earl Grey and now be a co-host. Wow.
Yes.
No pressure, eh?
Yeah, I can't just guest every once in a while and, you know, prepare for months. I need to do it every week.
Now you have to see us every week.
Oh, I love seeing you guys every week. It's just, you know, watching this stuff and making my notes and making sure I can do that during each week. I'm sure I'm
watching Aliens as well.
And watching random movies I haven't seen. But no, sorry, not random movies. Watching movies that other hosts want to see.
There you go.
Oh, I'll throw in a movie here and there that maybe you guys won't want to see. So we'll see how that goes.
There you go.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Today is a good day to die.
Great joy and gratitude.
Make it so.
Five card stud, nothing wild, and the sky's the limit.